Species unite.
Somebody told me that when I was a young designer at Mercedes, they said, well, it takes like, I think they said 20 cows to upholster this sedan. And you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, clearly people believe that cows, the leather is a byproduct of the food industry, but that's not necessarily true. When you part out the cow, the leather is actually the most valuable component of the cow.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Vicky von Holzhausen. Vicky is a former car designer who decided to make a vegan leather that could rival animal leather. After much research and many experiments, she and her team developed a sustainable leather alternative, and they tested it out as a handbag and have an entire line of handbags and accessories, all vegan, called von Holzhausen. That wasn't enough because her bigger mission was and is to replace animal leather, and not only to replace animal leather, but also to replace plastic. Earlier this year, von Holzhausen announced the introduction of LiquiPlant, 100% plant-based, plastic-free top coat. LiquiPlant is seriously one of the inventions of a lifetime. It can replace plastic top coats in all kinds of materials, including synthetic leather, paper, wood, plastic, and fabric. Vicky, thank you so much for being here. I want to talk about von Holzhausen, but I want to start really at the beginning because you have such a cool story.
It hasn't been a straight line, but I can definitely say that I was born to be a designer. And, you know, some people just like come out fully formed and they know what they want to do. I love design. Somehow I, you know, serendipitously was raised next to the number one design school in the country at the time called Art Center College of Design. I was raised in Pasadena. When I was a little older in my early, I guess, tweens, I was able to attend this sort of program called Saturday High, which is designed for high school students to get a taste of the arts and the design fields. So you could take figure drawing, you could take industrial design, you could take intro to automotive design. And so I started applying and taking these fun Saturday classes. I fell in love, and much to my, I went to an all-girls prep school. Much to their dismay, I was like, no, I'm not going to normal college. I'm going to design school. And I got in, and I guess that rest is history.
You had a mission.
Yeah.
And then you later worked for Mercedes and Audi, right? Was there something in between that?
It was cool because at that time, Art Center had a campus in Switzerland where the students could go and like get, you know, exposed to European design. And that changed everything. Definitely the Americans and the Europeans had different design aesthetics. And the Americans had like a real marketing flair and maybe a little more commercial. And then the Europeans were much more engineer-minded and thinking through, of course, the environment has always been at the forefront of European design because the countries are small and they have to deal with their trash. They have to deal with their resources much more so than we do here. And I fell in love with that as well. And I went to the Swiss campus. I went to work with Audi. Audi was at that moment like the forefront of design. And yeah, so I started there. Then I went to Mercedes, also an incredible company, really valued engineering. You know, I feel like definitely it was engineering first there, yeah. And which teaches you a lot. So your ideas have to work, they have to work well, but you can work within this like power of those boundaries. And then the Americans at the time really wanted to learn from what the Europeans were doing, I think. And so I was asked to come to General Motors. They were opening a new exciting design studio in North Hollywood. I was ready to move back to California and I took a job there. And that was really exciting because I was able to win programs that took me to Detroit, which meant I was working on advanced concepts that I won projects in the studio in LA. And they're like, okay, if you want to see it through to reality, wow, you can go to Detroit and, you know, spend 2-3 years there and see it through to the, you know, car on the road. So I did that. I actually worked on like 5 different cars in Detroit. 2 of them became production cars. 5 of them were show cars. So it was an exciting time, like no sleep, work all weekends, like live your life in some basement without windows, sketching all day and night. But you know, this is what young people should do, I guess.
And then how did you go from cars? You know, you were so in it and so successful. Like what made you stop?
Well, okay. So, you know, you kind of, it kind of runs its course, right? Like the European moment ran its course. The fact that I had done all the show cars and then production cars, and it kind of runs its course. And I think a lot of people that do these things, people that start businesses, people that kind of do these types of, this type of work, they kind of say, okay, I've done that. What's next? Right. So I feel, well, next was actually children. For me, it was like a moment where I took time off and I had my 2 kids. And then you have to sort of like think about what's next. Like, do I really want to go back to like the all-nighters, working all weekend, winning these car projects, traveling? And I just didn't see that as a feasible next step for me. But in also the bigger picture, like, what can I do with the information that I learned, right? And paralleling that, you know, I've been, I haven't eaten meat since I've been 19. And I really cared deeply about trash. I'm like obsessed with trash. I'm one of those people like that sits up and thinks about like, does anything really get recycled? And the answer is actually no, but that's a whole nother conversation we can get into.
Sure.
And, you know, I started kind of like connecting the dots. And so I thought about how do I express this? And the exciting way to express these ideas is really through the voice of beautiful products. So I started the brand using, you know, the information I had at the time. You know, what are great materials to build a fashion collection out of? At the beginning, it was a whole company of one. I did everything, the design, the manufacturing, customer service, you know, working with contractors to build out a website. I did everything. And that's why it's been a slow growth. So this is 2014, 15, you know, my second was born in 14. I started my business plan. 2015, I launched the website in November and started selling like a handbag.
So you didn't want to go back in full force, but you went back in full force. In 2014, the materials that were available to you, what were they like?
I went back to the auto industry and I said, okay, some companies are starting to use alternatives to leather. It's like vinyl, polyurethane, right? So they're 100% plastic materials, but some of them were quite beautiful. Like they felt like leather. So why use leather? They were durable. And well, actually, you know, at the beginning, I started working on, I bought leather and I thought, okay, let's look at what automotive grade leather looks like. Then I transitioned very quickly to alternatives because they looked just as good as leather. And they were actually more efficient, which really appeals to my design mind. Like, oh, it comes on a roll. I can set the patterns on perfectly. I don't have waste. You know, it's more cost effective. It's more, you know, it just works, right? So when you work with rolled goods and you can make any color you want and all of that. I started working with automotive grade, or I thought, you know, automotive grade plastic, polyurethane, so-called vegan leather. When you start to dig in and understand the process by which these companies create the material, and there's many great companies that have like revolutionized this roll-to-roll process of, you know, a polyurethane process. And just to understand like, okay, the carbon footprint of leather is huge. The carbon footprint of polyurethane can be one quarter that of leather. So it is plastic. However, it's much lower carbon footprint because you don't have to use land, grow a cow, feed the cow, kill the cow, all of these things. Then the leather tanning process is so chemically intense. You basically take a skin, you have to use formaldehydes a lot of times and chromium, which is cancerous. So all these things contribute to a very bad story. So I realized that and I chose polyurethane. Then I started digging into the polyurethane story, and that was, not a great story either. There's the microplastics, there's toxins, there's, chemistries that are now considered illegal in many countries. Back then they weren't, but in the years over, the last few years, they've evolved into becoming restricted substances. I realized that was not a great path. So I started building the materials from the ground up and thinking through what is the backing made out of? What is the chemistry made out of? And then, of course, by that time, I started assembling a team. And, in 2 years ago, we launched an innovation lab. So we have a science team. So they're PhDs in biopolymers that create chemistries that are plant-based. So it's evolved over a long period of time. And definitely the inputs, the materials, and the innovation has become like the nucleus of the business, right? So whereas the beginning, it was like design, making something exciting and fun and cool to wear and, selling it and marketing it. That was sort of like the beginning. But then really trying to think through, well, these are very important problems to solve, right? And they're bigger than just the fashion industry. Every industry that makes tangible products has to make them out of these components. And that contributes to their overall carbon footprint. So solving the material problem, these incumbents of leather and vegan leather, to replace these incumbents took center stage, right? It was like, okay, this is important, much more bigger picture, and this is what we're about. This is what we're going to do. And so since then, a lot has happened. We've developed something like 4 or 5 major innovations on the material front, and one really big one called Liquid Plant, which is 100% plant-based chemistry and can be used as a top coat to cover all sorts of surfaces, or can be used as a composite material to create a leather-like material or be something totally different. So we've really leapfrogged the idea of leather. Like, what is this material of the future? What can it be?
Just to understand it better, you have different materials that you use, like you use bamboo.
Yeah.
And you have 3 or 4 of those. And then you have Liquid Plant. And what is that used for specifically?
Liquid Plant is an innovation. It's an invention, really, that we launched at the beginning of this year. And it's 100% plant-based. And that is in a pilot stage. So that has been invented by our team at the lab here in Los Angeles. And we are, working with different partners now from all sorts of verticals. We actually have criteria for the partners that we take on. But, we're working with, like, let's say, a furniture company, a car company, a shoe company. So in different verticals that are big companies that want to solve this problem for their own materials. So we're piloting that. It's going into sort of like a roll-to-roll production later this year. And then that will scale. And the plan is, of course, for the Liquid Plant to take over and become the top coat for all of our commercial materials. So really, from a business strategy perspective, we don't let sort of like this sort of, progress, the progress of Liquid Plant slow down the ability to offer great plant-based materials today. So even though bamboo leather, let's use as an example, the top coat is 71% plant-based. The backing is 100% plant-based. Overall, it's 80 to 85% plant-based. That's amazing. Yeah. It is the highest plant-based durable material that passes automotive specs on the market. So you know, some people are like, well, it needs to be 100. Well, what material? I'd like to see a material that passes automotive specs, that doesn't use polyurethane, that claims to be 100%. And by automotive specs, I mean ingress egress testing. And that is a very, very specific test. It is a simulation of a person getting in and out of a seat 7 times a day for 10 years. So yeah, it's like major difficult test to pass. And Bamboo does that. And it, you know, is 80%+ plant-based, and it biodegrades in a landfill. So that is great. And liquid plant is like a greater future when it becomes 100%. And it needs some steps to get there. So we're piloting that. That's going to be manufactured here in the US.
And do you think eventually that will replace all of your other materials?
Or 100%. Yeah, that's the plan. And that's why we did it. And not only, I think, does it want to replace, you know, all the top coats of our leather-like materials, it can become a top coat for anything that uses polyurethane currently. So it's like a drop-in chemistry for polyurethane. So, you know, think about, and it's really kind of immense if you think about all the things that you come into contact with every day that are coated in plastic that you don't even realize, like the paper goods in your cupboard for your food, the, you know, your car seat, of course, leather is coated in polyurethane. So a leather skin is not durable. It has to have a polyurethane coating when it's put inside a car interior. I mean, certainly there's like fashion items that use natural hide and it ages and wears, but it's not durable enough to be inside a car. So they coat the leather in a car with polyurethane. So it's kind of like plastic coated. Why even use the leather at that point? Just use the plastic.
I think a lot of people who are like resistant to this whole world of kind of next gen materials, they don't realize that like their car seat, if it's leather, is plastic. And just coming up with these products, and it feels like this one is the winner. When I talk to people about leather and replacing leather, we don't realize how much leather and animal products are in everything, in home goods. They're everywhere. It's massive, massive. And to think that this stuff could all be gone in not that far from now with innovations like yours is like life-changing.
Well, it'll be life-changing for the planet because when you think about deforestation, the microplastic pollution, if we can start to chip away at eliminating whole areas where leather and plastic polyurethane is being used, then we will make a dramatic impact. And the idea is that, you know, there's many companies that need to be to raise up to solve this problem. It can't just be one company.
Well, and like you were saying with automotive, it feels like they all want to go this way. Nobody's resisting it, are they?
People, I mean, innovation is a great thing. It's powerful. It's powerful in marketing communication as well. Everybody wants the newest technology, right? It's sort of like your icing on top, right? It's you. If you're a brand and you're showing like the latest car, the latest shoe, the latest handbag, you want the coolest material on there.
Not only for the planet, which is massive, but I read on your website that it takes 10 cows for one car.
I think it's even more, unfortunately, but yeah, it depends what size vehicle. Somebody told me that when I was a young designer at Mercedes, they said, well, it takes like, I think they said 20 cows to upholster this sedan. And then you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, clearly people believe that cows, the leather is a byproduct of the food industry, but that's not necessarily true. When you part out the cow, the leather is actually the most valuable component of the cow. But we want to minimize, you know, people love eating meat and I'm not against that. Like it's not, you know, people want to do what they want to do. Sure. What we want to do is inspire people to pick cool things, right? Yeah. Like if this functions better and it looks cooler, then just go with that, right? And then on top of that, you get to save a little bit of carbon.
I think that is how we change the world, giving the world better options.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's not telling them what to do, for sure. You mentioned really quickly a little while ago, biodegradability. Will you talk about your materials and how this all works with biodegradability?
Liquid plant, I think, is a great example, but I can also talk about bamboo leather. I mean, just quickly, bamboo leather is designed to biodegrade in a landfill condition, so zero oxygen condition, in less than 250 days without any trace of microplastics, which is amazing and a big achievement on our part at that stage of business. But then we came up with the liquid plant invention, and liquid plant is a fully circular solution. So liquid plant is made out of linseed oil, castor oil, sugar. And so those inputs are chemically modified on the molecular level to be cross-linked. So they're, you know, very strong. And then the backing for that is made out of agricultural waste, which is also really interesting idea, because agricultural waste starts with a negative carbon footprint, because normally they burn agricultural waste. So you capture that component there. And so, and by the way, our chemistries, we actually are using a process in which we capture carbon. And so they are potentially, we haven't tested it yet because it's early days, but they are potentially carbon negative. So we have these chemistries that are made from plants and simple ingredients that are readily available and abundant. And they create the material, and then the material creates a product. And then when at the end of its life, if it's either, you know, shredded or it's thrown in a landfill or somewhere else, unfortunately, it will create nutrients for the soil because it goes back into the basic elements of, you know, sugar, castor oil, linseed oil. You know, they've been modified, but they're basically biodegradable and healthy, right? Wow. There's no toxins. So it's really amazing. It's a fully circular solution. We really need to be thinking in that way, because plastic, you know, is so easy to make and it's so cheap, and that's why everybody uses it. It functions so well. But when you think about it, what is the true cost of plastic? It's not the 35 cents it takes to make the container that holds your food, right? Or whatever, 5 cents. It's like the true cost is, what do we do with this stuff? You know, and what is, nobody recycles. Like NPR did a really good study on this. I remember hearing about it, and I need to figure out, like, find the reference, but they're basically tracing how much stuff really gets recycled. And recycling is, first of all, put onto the consumer to be responsible for, right? Which is already unfair. And it just isn't happening. We're taking all this effort to separate and recycle, and yet it's not happening. And when it does happen, it's inefficient. Plastics are not made in a pure way. They're blended. All sorts of polymers are blended together. It's impossible to separate them and to bring them back into a new plastic, right? And that process is incredibly toxic because of all the chemistries used to create the new plastic out of the old plastic. It's expensive and toxic. So, you know, biodegradability and the importance of that is huge. And companies have to be responsible at this point. You know, when they design something, when they make a new product, they have to be accountable for what happens to the product at the end of the life of that product. And that is the true cost of the product, and, like, you know, the cost to humanity.
As generations get smarter and things get more transparent, there's got to be more demand in a real legal way. It needs to happen where companies are responsible for the life cycle of their products, because the way it is now, you know, we've just created this monster. Okay, one of the coolest side things I found on your website, this candle, and what does vegan leather smell like? Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, people have a very emotional connection to leather, and it's kind of like what I'm talking about with people want to eat meat, right? They're emotionally attached to these things, right? And with leather, they think about, oh, that beautiful vintage leather jacket I have, or my Porsche interior, you know, smells so good, right? By the way, it's plastic that you're smelling, and the off gas of that. But anyway, or the tanning, right? The tannins. We thought about that, and that with technology, you can infuse the emotion and the memories back with a beautiful scent. And we worked with a wonderful company from France called Lola James Harper. And the founder, He's a very renowned perfume maker and has made sense for like an incredible, you know, like some hotels in Paris and Selfridges, I think, you know, like these major stores and hotels and also people. And we worked with him to create a scent that would replace the scent of leather or offer another option to leather. And it was for bamboo. And so we asked, you know, what does the smell of bamboo, you know, what can it be? And we gave it to all of our clients for the holidays to kind of inspire them and remind them that these technologies is kind of like the sky's the limit. We can infuse that into the top coat and give an experience to the customer. And wouldn't that be really cool when you're sort of like stuck in a car? That your car has, you know, not an overwhelming like perfumey scent, but it's like a sophisticated thing that gives you memories of that, the car that you had, you know?
I love it. I'm waiting for Liquid Plant, but until then, I'm a huge fan of all the rest. Thank you very much, Vicky.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
To learn more about Vicky and to learn about Liquid Plant, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you would like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.